Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome, it's Friday, and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. This is a busy, busy weekend, folks, and I hope if you are in the Minnesota area or anywhere around this, you will come out and join me at Wizard World Comic Con this weekend. I'll be there tonight, Friday. What time is it? I think 5:30 to 6:30 in room 101B. I'll be doing the superhero movies past, present, and future panel along with Tim. Brian Oak from The Current, Tim Lammers, the movie critic with KQ Morning Show and Care 11 News, and with Tony Kim, the writer and host for CrazyForComicCon.com. Then later on Friday night, Creatures of the Night. I'll be doing another panel from 8 o'clock to 8:45 in room 101H. You've seen the Winchesters and Buffy's Scooby Gang as they battle them on TV. Well, this is a look at real-life monster encounters with Black Eyed Kids, The Bloody Bones Man, Shadow People, and more. With me, your host, I'll be doing that for 45 minutes tonight. Then Saturday, I'll be hosting the Dr. Hooniverse fan panel. Things are going to get all wibbly-wobbly and timey-wimey at Wizard World Minneapolis with a panel discussing our favorite madman in the blue box. We're going to talk everything from classic to new Who, monsters, regeneration, spinoffs, and it'll all be moderated by me, Dave Schrader. And then Sunday, one of the biggest days for me, so excited to be a part of this, a conversation with Mickey Dolenz and Peter Tork of the Monkees in room 101D. That's Sunday, May 7th from 11:30 to 12:15. And we're going to have a great time. I hope you will come on out and check it out and be a part of the show with us this weekend. And make sure that after the panels, you come up and say hello to me. I'd love to speak with you and have a chance to get to know you. Tonight's show is brought to you by Amazon.com, the world's largest online shopping mall. Remember, if you need anything from Amazon.com, use our killer deals link, and you can find it at darknessradio.com. Then click on the killer deals link. You'll see all the banners for Amazon, whatever you have to order, whether it's our guests' books, movies, DVDs, clothes, food, whatever items you need from Amazon. Use that link, and a very small percentage of every sale goes to help us and pay all of our administrative costs for doing this show. So you can check that out. And our other sponsor for the evening is another Amazon company, Audible. That's right, Audible. If you guys love what you hear when we do these Friday shows, especially with the theater of the mind, then you guys would love Audible. If you haven't tried it already, you should be. They have the exclusive on a brand new Audible book series on the X-Files called Cold Cases. They're bringing back all the original actors to portray themselves in these theatrical book readings. It's going to be fantastic. I just got done reading listening to the Bruce Springsteen autobiography. I've got other books in queue, and this is great. For our listeners, you get a subscription, a 30-day free trial, plus one free download. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/darkness, and then you can sign up for that. All right, this evening's show, folks, we've got a great Theater of the Mind coming up a little later, kind of creepy, and it is a dogman, wolfman encounter. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. But joining us right now and for the remainder of tonight's show, Butch Witkowski. He's the director at the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania. He lives in Denver, Pennsylvania, and he's here tonight. We're going to talk about UFOs, random anomalies, these dogmen, bipedal dog creatures that are walking around, a whole myriad of topics. Butch, it's great to have you with us this evening.
Pleasure to be on with you guys.
It's great to have you. I think we had you on the show a number of years ago, and it's been too long, but I reached out to you, and you said you've got a lot of things that you're working on, a lot of new cases. So first of all, tell people that that aren't familiar with your work, what got you interested in researching and going out and investigating these claims?
Well, I had my first UFO sighting in 1989, along with some other people that are all standing in my driveway in Tucson, Arizona. And it was just so large, so big, so quiet, that I just had to know what it was. And, of course, called the police, called the Air Force Base, called everybody I could think of, news media, television, airports. Nobody saw anything, and I just thought, like, that's nuts. There is no way nobody saw something that's 300 feet long and 6 or 7 stories high floating above a mountain. And I just went after it that way and wasn't getting anywhere but collecting a lot of paper, reading a lot of books, spending a lot of money on nothing, and joined MUFON. I was with MUFON for a number of years, chief investigator, state section director, star team member, and I wasn't getting much further there either. So I decided to go out on my own.
Well, let me stop you there, Butch. You work with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. You feel that you really didn't get anywhere. What do you mean by that?
I wasn't getting what I wanted. I thought it would be more hands-on than it was. Kind of turned out to be more email investigations and telephone calls, and I really wanted to be in the field.
Oh, so you wanted to put yourself in these locations where these sightings were taking place. You wanted to be out and in the field, meeting the people, looking in their eyes, seeing what they're seeing.
Exactly. And that's the name of the game. And started my group in 2009, UFO Research Center, Pennsylvania. We got 12 affiliate groups in the United States and 2 overseas, 1 in England, 1 in Poland. All like-minded researchers, all out doing the same thing, ex-law enforcement, we got accountants, we got photographic guys, we got, we even got a judge. it's been running real well. We got a lot of stuff going on. But this past December, even though everybody's saying the same thing, that all these reports like Bigfoot, UFOs, cryptids, paranormal, all these things are really gaining ground in just the last year. December turned out to be the weirdest thing I've ever been through and still going through.
Okay.
It started out with a gentleman sending a report, a hunter, in Pennsylvania State Forest, central Pennsylvania, up around Tuscarora, matter of fact. And he's in a tree stand, and he's on private property in this game land. And he's been hunting that private property, up, which belongs to a friend of his, for 20-some years. And he sees a couple buck walk out the end of the field, and he lifts up his rifle and scopes them in, get a little closer, he's going to take one. And then he says, what follows the deer? He said, I've never seen anything like that in my life. So he describes these things as larger than a wolf on all fours, so they're a quadruped. Tall, long-eared, but pointed, very wolf-like in the features of the face, massive body, kind of a humpback, medium-sized tail as far as length, but the legs, he said, were very odd. He said they just did not look like canine legs. So one of these creatures chases off one of the deer into the brush. The other deer follows the other one, but this canine creature, whatever it was, it stood its ground, and he was downwind, so it caught his scent pretty quick. Started walking toward him, and he picked up the rifle, and he's got it in his scope. I mean, he's looking right at it. He can blow this thing to kingdom come. And it gets within 100 yards, and it just stops and looks up at him and starts growling. Now, we have never had that in any canine report in all the 24 or 25 reports we have of bipedal canines. And I'm thinking, well, I'm talking to the guy, I'm going, well, did you shoot? And he went, something told me not to pull the trigger. We've also had that in 3 cases where we had individuals that had high-powered weapons out in the field and could have very easily just blown away whatever they were confronting, and they all had that same thing, don't shoot. So is that a telepathic thing, or is it fear? I don't know. So the thing's at the bottom of the tree, staring up at him and growling. He's not going to shoot because he just said, I just had this thing, don't shoot, don't do it. So he said, I just watched it, it just watched me. And then he said, after a few minutes, it just got up and sauntered off, went back in toward the area where the deer were to begin with. So he waits like 2.5-3 hours before he gets down out of the tree to make sure it's not.
Yeah, I don't blame him, yeah.
Tell you the truth, Dave, I'd still be there.
Yeah, and you and me both.
So he gets down, gets to his car, drives up to the local ranger station, goes in and starts to tell him his story. And they say, well, we've had a lot of wild dogs in the area, you know, feral dogs. And he said, let me tell you something, buddy. He said, this was no dog. He said, I've been out here 20-some years hunting. I've seen feral dogs. I know what a big dog looks like. He said, these were not dogs. I don't know what they were, but they were not dogs. They weren't coyotes. They weren't wolves. They weren't coy wolves. So I don't know what you got out here, but you got a problem. And he left. So we tried to get a hold of the ranger station. Of course, they don't even remember the guy. And we have to wait. I think we just got the permission to go on the private land from his buddy. So that's an open case right at the moment.
And what, can you tell us what state that took place in?
Well, Pennsylvania.
Oh, it did. Okay. In Pennsylvania.
Tuscarora Mountain Range area in Pennsylvania, right near the state game lands there.
Now, hold on a second, Butch. A few seconds ago, you said if you would have seen this, you would still be up in that tree stand. Now, you know what this guy said. You know where it is, and you're going to go out and investigate that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, that kind of flies in the face of you would have stayed in that tree stand. You're actually going to go out and look for this thing.
Since the last time we've talked, our truck has been added quite a few non-lethal weapons. So if I can chase away a Kodiak bear with what I got in that truck, I'm sure I can chase one of these away. If it turns out that I can't, hey, it's been really nice talking with you guys.
That's unbelievable. You know, tonight in our Theater of the Mind segment, we have a story very reminiscent of what you just explained, of one of these bipedal, the guy referred to it more like a wolf man. He said it was a big wolf, came out on all fours, and once they drew its attention, it stood upright. And he said, the story is chilling. It's a really creepy story. He and his girlfriend were just out trying to have a good night, enjoying star watching and a little canoodling, and it went horribly wrong. Very strange stories, but it's interesting how it's mirroring what you just explained, and this took place in Wisconsin somewhere.
Well, we have 23 active reports right now of, we had 24, but one I proved off as a hoax. So we have 23 active reports of a large, 8 to 10 foot tall, bipedal only, it's only ever been seen bipedal, wolf-like head, massive wolf-like head, large chest, muscular arms, hands with claws, very thin-waisted, very heavy muscled thigh area, and hock legs like a dog with glowing yellow eyes. That is the description in every report we got since November of 2014. No differentiating in the reports. Everybody describes exactly the same creature. Color-wise, very short, dark brown or very dark brown or black hair and no tail.
Right. Okay, you're hearing this. You're seeing that there are stories like this all around the United States. And what do you make of this? I mean, obviously science is going to poo-poo the idea.
Of course. Look, after all the research and you know, I've been at the research on these things now for, I mean, I've touched out to the indigenous in Oklahoma to see if we're dealing with a skinwalker, because Pennsylvania one time was all Indian territory. There were no white men here. And then we get to the old stories of werewolves. Then we got to, you know, I got a book from 1865, the original werewolf book. Got a hold of that and went through that. And, you know, these things go back so far in time, it's ridiculous. And I often say to people, well, what is, you know, they'll say to me, like, what's your opinion? Well, I don't have an opinion because I didn't see it yet, and I don't have any evidence of it yet. So my best guess is that I'm dealing with a relic, something that's very, very old and been out there for a very, very long time. And that really, I really got that realization when doing some research. I pulled up an article in an Erie, Pennsylvania newspaper, way no longer defunct, a long time. And as I'm reading this story, And the description given of this farmer who was attacked in 1865 is identical to the descriptions I have from my very first sighting report in 2014.
All right. Now, one thing I'm curious about, when you're gathering this information, they're telling you these stories. Again, we're kind of, you know, speculating on what it exactly is that we're dealing with, because there is no hard evidence. We've seen big footprints. We've seen tracks and chunks of hair that have been lifted that they can't seem to identify. Is there any kind of physical proof left behind that would make us believe that there could be some 8-foot-tall bipedal wolf creature walking the woods?
To this date, absolutely none. The only thing we've got, look, this thing has stealth on its side, that it's got. The only thing we have on our side is technology. So over the last 2 years, we've invested heavily in infrared and thermal imaging cameras, and surveillance cameras will take a photograph every 5 seconds, and different lighting procedures that we're using. I don't think we're going to bait this thing. I don't think we're going to call it in, or wood knocking is going to help or anything like that. We're just going to go and we'll continue to go to the sites. We'll leave at the end of this month on another expedition where we go to those sites. We'll, you know, really set it up with camera traps all over the place. Camera traps are very sophisticated because we don't have to stand around and watch them. We can be back at the van, you know, sitting at a table and watching them on laptops. And they pre-record, they constant record both sound and video. So the only proof that I'll be able to obtain, if any, is going to be photographic. Now, we've gotten some audio, but the audio is so broken up, and you know, anything in the woods, I mean, if you had a rabbit in a trap screaming in a hollow of a mountain area, I mean, he'd sound like, geez, Godzilla.
Right. Yeah. I've rabbit screaming could be one of the most terrifying noises aside from cats having sex I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that's what we're doing. We're going into areas looking for hiding spots because it seems like every location that we have, there is water close by, very close. Mm-hmm. There are also abandoned mines, abandoned railroad leeway stations where, you know, like if guys were hauling stuff from New York to Ohio, they have these stations set up where they can switch crews. The guys go in, they stay there. It's like a house. They're very well built. Some of them are in very good shape. And, you know, the next crew gets on a train and continues on, and they can pick them up on the way. They just swap crews back and forth. But the railroad system in Pennsylvania, in many areas, there's hundreds of these things. And most of them are all abandoned now. But so we're going to try to find habitat, and there are a couple places that for some reason our government has blocked them off.
Well, I mean, couldn't that just be safety features? You are talking about some of these areas that were former mine areas that are known to collapse and may be quite dangerous.
Well, no, a lot of the mines are actually still open. What I was going to talk about was that we have a nuclear reactor in the middle of a state game land here in Pennsylvania. And it's all sealed off. I mean, the reactor's long gone, but it was originally put there back in the late 80s, early 90s, to develop nuclear engines for private aircraft. Like, so you have a little Cessna 172, we're going to put a nuclear engine in it. I didn't think that worked. But anyway, so that place is there. There's a lot of activity around there, especially UFO activity above it.
Butch, let me ask you this now. I'm just curious. As somebody who investigates this and talks to a lot of people, I do that on our radio show on a nightly basis. We speak to people to share their stories. And, you know, I'll push a little and pull a little to try to get a better understanding. But doesn't it just seem convenient that they always don't pull the trigger, don't kill the creature, don't have any kind of proof, they didn't get a good shot of it with their camera or video camera? Doesn't that get frustrating for you?
Well, not one person out of the 20-some reports had a camera available. To give you some idea, the one guy was walking his dogs. He was the very first sighting. The dogs actually saw it before he did. The second sighting was two music teachers coming home from work in the evening, early evening. It was just starting to turn dark. They saw something chewing on a roadkill aside the road, a quarter mile in front of them. They turned on their high beam lights. It stood up, and there it was.
How do you separate reality from people trying to inject themselves into the history of these type of stories? Because to me, that seems like it would be one of the most irritating aspects of doing this job. I've talked to a lot of people who will tell me that they've had this experience at this location, and I find out later from somebody that knows them, they've never been there. People just want to be a part of a story. How do you start differentiating between the fact and fiction, and who's just looking for attention and who legitimately believes they saw, an 8-foot-tall bipedal wolf man?
Well, I think the best thing we did was when we got the first report, unlike, if I can get a report and, we can nail it down pretty quick, I'll put it on our website. But for some reason with this first case, I didn't publish it. As a matter of fact, I didn't publish the first six cases. And in the three first cases, case one, two, and three, they're within 10 miles of each other. These guys don't know each other. One's a retired airline Air Force pilot. The other two guys are musicians, basic music teachers. And the third guy is actually runs a television station up in that area, a small TV station.
Now, are these creatures aggressive towards them other than just maybe being big and growling or snarling? Is there any other kind of...
No aggression from any of them except the ones where the one where the guy sitting in the tree stand was the only one that ever showed aggression. The rest of them just kind of stand there. They don't show any fear and they don't run. The guy that was the closest was a guy who was hunting birds in game land, walking along a swamp area where there's a lot of birds. And he just had his feeling he was being watched. And mountain laurel here in Pennsylvania, from the ground up, there's nothing. There's no leaves, nothing, just a couple branches. But from there, about midway up, it's very bushy. So he's just turning around, looking around. He kind of sees these legs, which at first he thought was an elk or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then as he's looking up through, he sees it from the shoulders up. And it's staring right at him. He's less than 20 feet away. He's got a 12-gauge Magnum in his hands. He immediately puts the gun to rest instead of holding it upright like he was, puts it to rest, pointed toward the ground. It's staring at him. He's staring at it. And he said, "All I can tell you is I just had a voice in my head saying, you need to leave now or something really bad is going to happen." So he said, I backed out, my gun to the ground, all the way to my truck. Never took my eyes off it, and he said, and it never took its eyes off of him. It watched him all the way to the truck. And as he drove, backed up to turn around to drive out, he said it watched him and never took its eyes off him. And I said, well, how'd you feel after all that? He says, it puts a whole new meaning in my life that there are things out there that we don't know exist. And he said, I'll never go back there again. He said, I've hunted there all my life. We had that from the very first guy, too. He's been taking his dogs in there forever. He said, I'll never go back in those game lands.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame him.
Then when we went to those game lands,
right,
and we spent a weekend up there, it was probably the strangest weekend I've ever spent in my life, except for one or two at college, which we won't discuss.
Right.
And one of the things was we're in the middle of a state game land on a mountain. Rangers know we're there. They're checking on us every couple, three, 4 hours. Actually, they would just come up and drink our coffee.
Did they know why you were there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I told them. I told them flat out. And I asked the guy, I said, did you ever hear or see anything strange? He says, we used to have just coyotes. He said, now we got coy wolves. And I said, they're very dangerous. He said, oh, yeah. He said, we see them. We shoot them. He said, but right now, he said, we got a bunch of packs running around, 8 or 10 here, 8 or 10 there. And then he whips out his phone and shows me pictures on his camera phone of these coyotes. I'm like, that's not a coyote. That's a big coy wolf. He said, oh, yeah, they get pretty big.
Now, a coy wolf, is that a mutation between a coyote and a wolf?
Yep, that's a northern gray out of Canada and a coyote mate. And They carry very similar features of a wolf, and they have a wolf mentality. Mm-hmm. So if you encounter one or two on a trail, don't worry about those one or two. Worry about the six or seven that may be behind you.
Oh, the ones you don't see because they're drawing your attention like a hunting pack.
Exactly, just like a wolf pack would.
Well, and I'm looking, they are beautiful animals. I'm looking at pictures of them right now. Beautiful.
And I said to him, I said, "Do you hear anything strange?" He said, "Well, yeah. Last year," he said, "I heard all these screams and stuff that I couldn't place." He said, "I've been here 12 years as a park ranger here, and I've never heard anything like it." And he said, "We got bears, we got mountain lion, we got this, we got that." And I'm going like, "Yeah, okay." I said, "But can you describe it?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "It sounded like something was just really, really pissed off." And I went like, "Okay, well, where'd you hear it?" And he said, "Well, that doesn't mean anything because it sounded like it was coming down by the swamp. But," he said, "we're in a valley, you're on a mountain." He said, "Could keep coming from anywhere." So we go on with our thing. We set up camp. We get all the cameras out. Everybody's there. We got a team on the ground. In the whole weekend, which was a full moon, it was a brand new full moon, in one of the largest 68,000-acre parks in this state, do you know what we heard?
What?
Nothing. Not a bird, not a cricket. Not a deer, nothing. Absolutely dead silence. Our recorders picked up nothing, and we heard nothing. We could not keep a fire going. Even during the day, it would burn like crazy. Man, I could have melted steel. At night, the minute the darkness came, the fire went out, and we played hell, even with an accelerant trying to keep it going. Another thing, the weather station on the truck was picking up wind change. The wind would change from direct north to direct south, from direct east to direct west. So when I came home, I called the Penn State University Weather Bureau and checked with them what would cause that to happen. He said, "Well, it's thermals." He said, "But unfortunately," he said, "you'd have to go to Mount Everest or the Himalayas for that to happen." Mm-hmm. "It doesn't happen here. And I've got it documented on a weather station." And So
aside from just the dogmen, you've got strange weather anomalies and things that are taking place where they should not.
It gets better.
Okay.
So about 3 o'clock in the morning, I said to one of the guys, I said, "You know, I'm just going to go in the sit in the front seat, the computer in the truck. I just want to check a couple things." I was only in there for 10 minutes at the most. Found what I was looking for, got out of the truck, and I went outside, and I was talking to them, and they just kept staring at me like I was nuts. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, my fly's not open. I got shoes on. Everything seems good. I looked at them and said, "What is the problem?" I could hear myself. They said, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "I'm Polish. What else?" And he said, "There's something going on." He said, "You were just talking to us, right?" And I said, "Yeah, didn't you hear me?" He says, "We saw you. We didn't hear you." I said, "What do you mean you didn't hear me?" He said, "Butch." And he played the recorder back. And I could hear them on the recorder, not when I was out there originally, but on that recorder, I could hear him going, "What's wrong with you? Say something. We can't hear you." And I heard everything I said to him. Okay, Sunday comes around. We say our goodbyes to everybody. Everybody, the teams all break up, and we're going to plan our next trip. We get down to the bottom of the mountain. We take trash out of the truck, take it over, dump it in the truck, say goodbye to the state ranger and his wife and kids. Jump back in the truck. My left arm was dead, totally dead. Hmm. I couldn't move it. I couldn't turn the steering wheel with it. I couldn't even close it. I couldn't make a fist. I couldn't do anything at all. I didn't say anything to the guy in the truck with me. We kept going. I kept trying to do something. I could feel my arm was moving, but it wasn't. I was looking at it. We got to the end of the road, which takes us out of the park. I made the turn one-handed out of the park onto the highway, and my arm was fine. I mentioned that to the indigenous chief out in Oklahoma, what happened, that they couldn't hear me and that my arm, plus all the other nonsense that went on that weekend. And he told me, he says, "You need to be very, very careful." He said, "You have no idea what you may be dealing with." He said, "I can't tell you what you're dealing with, but," he said, "I got a pretty good idea, and you got to be very careful."
And he wouldn't give you any insight on what he thought was going on?
No, because if a member of the indigenous mentions a skinwalker or a protector or a guardian, as some are called, that doesn't bode well for them very much at all. They will be the brunt of anything.
All right. Butch Witkowski is our guest this evening. And now we're going to go deep on the Walk in the Wild side. In this, The Dark Hives, Another True Encounter.
Theater of the Mind. Even a man who is pure of heart. A real-life collision course with fear, shared by Michael and Chance Jones. At the start of 2011, I had met and fallen very hard for a coworker who would eventually become my wife. Chance and I would spend long nights talking, laughing, and driving. We could just sit and talk for hours, and we often did. She loved to go on walks and hikes, and together we would explore all of the great outdoors that Wisconsin had to offer. We felt a great connection with the outdoors and loved watching animals, blue skies, starry nights, and all that it had to offer. After several months of dating and many adventures, we had spent the day at the beach surrounded by sun, surf, and sand, and had decided to go round out the day with a late dinner and a drive. Dinner was great, and I had decided I was going to pop the question tonight on our drive. I was excited and nervous, as one tends to be in these situations. We drove, singing hysterically along with one of our favorite driving tunes, to stargaze and snuggle. It was early hint of fall near the end of August, and the days were warm, but the nights could become chilled. My car, a classic old station wagon adorned with real fake wood paneling, was our go-to vehicle. It was great for travel, convenient to jump into if our camping trips were ever cut short by rain, and the long hood? Man, perfect. To lay across to stare out into a sky, watching the clouds roll by, or to watch the stars in the heavens as they burn brilliantly in their dazzling light show that they would put on for just us. The sky was clear, stars stretching for miles, and the sounds of the wild surrounded us. Bugs in the trees and crickets all around serenading us. This was going to be perfect. We slid into our favorite spot high atop a small bluff that overlooked our town. It gave a great feeling of seclusion, but knowing that civilization was never too far away. The moon was full and bright, and the temperature was just the right mix against our freshly sunbaked skin. We unrolled a small blanket we kept in the car across the hood, and I helped her up onto the makeshift flying carpet. She looked so lovely. Her skin basked in the pale blue light of night, and with her sitting atop my car, I took her hand in mine and stared lovingly into her eyes. And with my excited, nervous stammering, I asked, "Chance, will you marry me?" I held out a small box I had been keeping in my pocket and opened it. The moonlight twinkled against the small stone inset into the ring I had chose for this very moment. The diamond, not very big, but the love behind it was, and the moonlight played beautifully off of it to make it seem much more grand than it really was. Her eyes welled with tears. She nodded and slid the ring on her finger as she slipped to the front of my car, wrapping her arms around my neck and kissing me deeply. I knew right then, life could never feel better than this moment, right here. We kissed passionately and laughed a nervous laugh together as I climbed aboard and sprawled across the hood, her head now resting comfortably on my chest as she nestled in so closely. We lay there chatting, occasionally stealing kisses, and giggling as we spoke about our future and our plans for a wedding. That's when we heard the movement. Coming from the trees to the left of us, a small doe poked her head out of the woods, and she gingerly approached the clearing in front of us. Her head lowered to nibble at some grass. We sat in amazement. This was a Disney moment, and the beauty was not lost on us. Then, the deer lifted its head, and it snapped to the right where it stared intently into the woods. We wondered what it heard. Perhaps its mate was nearby, or its fawn would soon join it for a late-night snack. That's when I heard the low rumble, the deep and close growl emanate from the woods. It was a warning growl, and we looked on, certain that we were about to see a wolf or coyote spring forth from the woods to chase its prey. The crickets and bugs seemed to silence themselves, and we could hear something big moving through the woods. Twigs were snapping, leaves and debris crunching under its fast-moving gait. The doe turned to the left and sprang toward the woods that it had come from. Then we saw it. Crashing out from the right, a large wolf, huge actually, bound out about 50 to 60 yards from us into the clearing, backlit only by the low city lights. It made the creature look like something from a movie. We gasped quietly and watched as it sniffed about, trying to catch the scent of the doe, or so we thought. It slowly turned its gaze in our direction and let out a series of snorts and growls. We were fascinated. Never having been this close to a wolf before, it was intimidating and exciting all at the same time. It took a few lumbering steps towards us, and Chance, always the optimist, cried out,
"Shoo, shoo, go on, get out of here."
The next thing we saw changed our lives forever. The wolf tipped its head from side to side as though contemplating the less intimidating demand my fiancé had just barked out at him. Then it moved to face us, its head and body now facing our direction. I yelled in the most intimidating bellow I could muster, "Go on! Get out of here!" The wolf, which already looked huge and frightening, began to stand upright? Its back legs bent at its haunches, the front legs curled up in front of the monster, and it stood there, eyeing us, letting go with a few more warning snorts and yips. We instinctively slid off the sides of the hood, broke for the doors to protect ourselves in the confines of the vehicles that we had moments ago been resting on comfortably. We slammed the doors and hammered down the locks. I reached for the headlight and pulled on the lever to fill the area before us in light. Somehow feeling this would protect us and give us a better view of what we clearly had to have mistaken in the heat of the moment. The creature was only illuminated for a brief second before it dropped its massive frame back down to all fours and bolted towards the woods. Our car was filled with screams and expletives repeated with a few, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!" for good measure. I reached for my keys and my heart stopped. They were nowhere to be found. In my haste, they had slid from my belt loop onto the hood as we scrambled towards safety. Now, the imminent danger appeared to have been gone. The creature had run from the bright lights that burst forth from my car. I looked at Chance, and I swallowed hard. I have to go out and get those keys, I mumbled in an understandably unhappy voice.
No, please, just stay in the car,
she pleaded. I can't. I have to get out there. I've got to get those keys, I assured her. I popped the lock and slowly opened the door, holding my breath as she whimpered softly. I slid out of the car and around the door to the hood where I triumphantly reclaimed my keys. I breathed a temporary sigh of relief. Then we heard the massive growl and howl coming from the woods to my left. The monster was back and heading directly towards me. I hurried back into the car, slamming the door, securing the lock again as I fumbled with the keys.
Go, go, go!
Chance cried out. I'm trying, I assured her. I was trying, but in my current state of fear, I was all thumbs and shaking. Then the entire car rocked as something massive slammed against it and let out with a horrific, angry howl. It banged at my door and again lifted itself to its hind legs and stared into our car. Its upper lip pulled back in a snarl. A small patch of fog from its nose and condensation splattered against my window as it snorted repeatedly. Finally, my keys slipped into the ignition and I turned the key and fired off the 8-cylinder behemoth I drove, never happier that I owned such a big, sturdy car. It rocked the car again with a mighty shove, and I slammed the gear stick into reverse and jammed on the gas. The wheels spun as the car searched for traction, and we flew wildly backwards. The front end swung wide to the left, and I clipped the thing with my front bumper. It sent the creature back to all fours, and it let out with a wailing noise.
Hurry! Just go, go!
Chance screamed out again. I did. She didn't need to tell me 3 times. We hauled ass home, Chance weeping the whole ride.
Oh my God, we should call somebody and report this,
she said in a voice of confusion and panic between sobs. And say what, I yelled. We were just attacked by the goddamn wolfman? After we settled down, we did make a call to animal control and told them we had encountered a very large wolf. And where? We left out the part where it was massive and stood up on its hind legs. After we finished filling in the officer at Animal Control with our story, again, slightly altered to save us the embarrassment of what we thought we had saw, and giving them my address, we both were caught off guard at the words that the officer ended the call with.
Yeah, we're aware of the situation up there. This seems to be an ongoing problem, and we suggest you do not return. We have specialists coming in to handle this. Thank you. Have a good night.
Well, needless to say, we never returned. It made the night of our engagement even more memorable. And since that time, we, as our favorite radio host says, no longer go into the out-of-doors for any extended periods, especially at night. The weirdest part of my tale may be in what happened once I got home after dropping Chance off. I walked around my car to look at the damage caused by the creature and found a nice-sized dent in the door and front quarter panel, some blood spatter and tufts of fur embedded in the bumper from where I hit it as we pulled out. I shook my head and murmured a few choice swear words under my breath. God damn it, son of a... And I decided I would handle the cleanup in the morning. When I was done scanning the damage to my car, I looked towards the end of my driveway, and that's when I noticed a police car idling on the street and a long black sedan parked behind it. The officer was at the driver's window of the sedan, and I assumed he was in the process of giving the poor bastard a ticket, although neither had their headlights on and the cop's cherry tops weren't illuminated. The next morning, after a restless night of sleep, I set out to go clean up the mess on my car, and to my amazement, there was no blood. There was no fur, just the large dents and a few scratches left behind. Someone had cleaned up all the DNA evidence of my encounter with no explanation. Now this was long before I heard stories of dogmen on radio shows and TV programs. My night had been something straight out of a horror movie.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back now. Butch Witkowski, our guest this evening, as we're talking about these wolfmen, skinwalker, dogmen encounters. We'll talk about UFOs and other strange anomalies that he's been researching and investigating. Butch, this is kind of thrilling, right? And you've got this area of Pennsylvania. It's also very populated with Bigfoot sightings, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Our research area. We have on the web. We call it the Lichen Loop. We have not had any reports outside of that loop. Now we found many historical reports outside the loop, but as far as our stuff is concerned, it's all within the loop. So are we dealing with just one thing, or just a few, or maybe more than that? But like I said, when the show started, you know, everything has gotten topsy-turvy. I was never a great believer in UFOs and paranormal mix.
Right.
You know what I mean? And keeping an open mind, like you have to do if you do this stuff, it was proven again that it's a very real possibility. Now, December of this year has really thrown me back in my seat, because we got a UFO report of a triangle that a gentleman coming home from work is getting out of his truck. He looks up. He sees this large black triangle. His camera's laying there. He grabs his camera, takes the shot. It's a good shot. It is what it is. You know, I tried to take it apart. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a good fix. It's a good photograph. So a couple days before Christmas, he calls. He said he's got orbs flying over one side, one mountain, crossing over this flatland valley over to another mountain. And he'll call me next time they show up. I said, okay. Now, this guy only lives less than 15 miles from my house. So I'm outside, of course, looking like a bozo, and I don't see nothing. And it was day before Christmas, not quite midnight. Phone rings. It's him. They're here now. I said, I'll be right there. Now, sometimes, in all the years I've been doing this, was like 26, 27 years, you would think that I would have put boots on or something to go out into the snow. No. I had my slippers on, and I grabbed a light jacket. Got in the truck, drove down to his house, standing there looking around, and sure as shooting, here's these orbs. And they come up over the mountain, they go across the field, some stop, some don't, some break into three, some go back into one, and then they go off into the other side of the mountain on the other side of the road. And I said, how long has this been going on? And he says, quite a while. So after 4 hours of standing there and pretty much getting frostbite, I decided, well, okay, let me know when it happens again. So get back in the truck, come home. The day after Christmas, he calls. He said, I have a problem. And I said, okay, what's the problem? He said, well, I saw the orbs earlier tonight, but that was real early. It was almost still daylight. And I said, okay. He said, my girlfriend, her two kids, myself, and a buddy of mine, he said, were out in the yard just saying goodbye. They had come over for dinner, nutsing around. And he said, we were surrounded by, I don't know what. I said, what does that mean? He says, just shadows. But there were like five of them. And I said, is everybody still there? I mean, the girlfriend, oh, yeah, they're here. I said, keep everybody there. I'm on my way. Got in a truck, drive down, talk to all of them. They all say the same thing. So he says goodbye to them. Everybody goes on the way. It's just him and I. And I said, okay, now exactly where did you see these? Take me right to the spot. So we go out behind the house. This is a very large and old farm. It was built in 1870-something. And behind the farm, they're building a 400-foot-long chicken barn. Now, this chicken barn is to raise chicks from embryos, and then they sell the chicks. And it's not completed. It's got the roof. It's got the walls. Nothing's done on the inside. There's no flooring or anything. It's just a building that's not completed. They're waiting for all the equipment. So he's pointing around. I'm looking around, and I see something at the corner on the roof of the building that I can only best describe, Dave, as a distortion. So I said to him, I said, well, do you see anything now? And he's looking around. He says, yeah, there's something up on the roof on the corner of the building there. I said, yeah, I see it. And then I started looking around while he was looking at it. And I found another one standing in front of a doorway. Looked to be about 5-6 foot tall, but no legs that were touching the ground. And there was fresh snow. So there were, you know, I would have saw prints afterwards, and there were no prints. And I said, well, do you see anything else? Because I didn't want to put that in his mind and him saying, oh, yeah, I see it, you know. So he's looking around. He's going the wrong way, and then he comes back, and he wait a minute. He said, in front of the white door, he said, I see something there. He was right. I saw it, too. So you're familiar with Lon Strickler. And Lon, it was actually his case to begin with, and I called him on the phone, told him what I'd seen. So Lon and I made an appointment to come back and, you know, really spend some time there. So the day we were going to get there, we had to cancel because in this area where I live, we had a huge windstorm. A lot of damage, and especially down toward the farm. We expected to see the farm, you know, over in the field on pieces. The property to the rear of this farm was totally destroyed. Property to the left of the farm lost 50 trees, old growth trees. The property to the other side of the farm was lost a roof and had a couple cars overturned. Across the road from the farm, a bunch of farms got destroyed, knocked down silos, flipped over tractor trailers loaded with feed, destroyed some barns. Damage to his place when we showed up on the 26th, the day after that windstorm, nothing. Not a thing. To get to the back of the house, I had to walk through a pile of leaves that had accumulated in the corner or side of his pickup truck. Mm-hmm. They were still there. They're there till today. So I had a thermal imager, and Lon walked down to the door where we saw the one distortion, mm-hmm. and his son Matt was standing beside of me, and I turned on the thermal imager, and I took a ground temperature, which was 58. I targeted the middle of Lon's back, which was 68. I pulled it up and looked to the distortion. Now, the distortion wasn't exactly at the very end where I saw it. It had moved to the left a little bit. It was still there. I targeted that temperature, photographed it. Temperature was 25, dead center. Moved along. There was nothing in front of the door. It was now up on the roof and more to the right of the door. Tagged that for the temperature. It was 25 degrees to 27 degrees inside the outside edge, and it was still there, and photoed that. So now what am I dealing with? I don't have a clue. I have no clue. This is not alien. Okay, so again, the background research, which is very important, which a lot of people don't do, and that's a shame. But this valley was in Indian names. At one time, it was there were three Indian tribes there. And these tribes were all at war with the other. It was Iroquois, it just went out of the top of my head. But anyway, there were three tribes. They were all at war with each other. So this whole valley was at war. But it was a very fertile valley because it's all farms now, mostly all Amish and Mennonite, and a lot of water. Every farm has a pond. And one group used to bury their dead just like we do today, and the other group cremated their dead after the battles, Mohawk. And as the white men moved in, these groups moved up into western Pennsylvania and northern New York and southern New York. But the only disturbance to the property from the windstorm was zero. He didn't even lose a shingle.
Hmm.
Those shingles are older than I am. I'm 70. And the no damage to the house whatsoever. Nothing was. There's a plastic trash can outside the door. It wasn't even flipped over. It was still there, and it's empty. There's nothing in it. I mean, you know, a windstorm like that that blows over tractor trailers loaded with grain, you would think would take the can away.
Right.
No damage whatsoever. So I've gone back a number of times. They're still there. Now they change position. The temperature stays the same. There's nothing in the building. There's no electromagnetic field that we can find. There's no radio frequency field that we can find inside or outside the building. Everything test-wise is kosher. The dirt and the samples we took, everything is kosher, nothing there. And so these distortions, again, going back to all we could find indigenous-wise, I think that when these guys dug that 400-foot-long foundation for that building, they got into something they shouldn't have, possibly a burial ground or a cremation site. I don't know. But all I know is they're there. I have them on infrared film and infrared video, and nothing hides from infrared.
Right.
Nothing. It's either cold or hot. And I can see them with infrared. I can see them with thermal. And to tell you the truth, Dave, I just really have no idea whatsoever what I'm dealing with at all. I don't even have a clue.
Right. I mean, and where would you go to find research on that? I mean, it's a strange anomaly. If any of our listeners have experienced anything like this, where can they reach out to you, Butch, maybe giving you some insight on what that may be, how that's occurring?
Oh, absolutely. Well, this weekend we'll be up at the Bigfoot conference, camping conference up there in Farmington, Pennsylvania for 3 days. But if anybody wants to reach me, they can get me at on the website or Facebook. Website is uforcop.com. That's uforcop.com, UFO Research Center, Pennsylvania. Or they can get me on Facebook, Twitter, Butch UFO. I don't have a clue. I seriously have no clue whatsoever. And then
when you have places like this that are so wrought with activity and energy, do you see them intersect? Are there experiences where these dogmen, Sasquatch, and UFO all happen to be taking place within a few days of one another?
Well, that'll bring up the next thing that happened. During this time, during mm-hmm. the same time, this December, I got a call, again, a UFO sighting. And I go down, and the guy tells me what he's got and shows me the picture he got. And, you know, everything that part's all good. There's no problem there. So he invites me in the house. He said, now, since that happened, these weird things are happening. I'm going like, well, what are you talking about? And I started looking around the house, and it was like walking into the house of Usher. If you remember what that looked like, I mean, there's pictures of Satan. There's crucifixes. There's pictures, oil paintings of the Inquisition. The house is filled with it. And I said, what do you do for a living? So I'm an antique dealer. I said, oh, you collect this stuff. He said, oh, yeah. I said, you know, this stuff is not really good to hang around with. He said, oh, no, we sell it. You know, people up in New York buy this stuff big time, big bucks. I went, oh, okay, whatever. I said, so what's the problem? He said, well, there's stuff here that we don't know what it is. And I said, what do you mean? So he starts showing me some pictures off a camera. And I said, I don't know what that is. And then I went out to the truck, got a meter, took a tri-field meter through the house. The minute I walked up to the door, the meter pinned, and it never went back to zero the whole time I was there. And then he said, I said, when did this start? And he said, well, right after we saw the UFO. And I said, okay. And he said, we don't go down the basement anymore because there's something down there. And he said, I said, well, can I go down? He said, yeah, you can go down, but I'm not going with you. So I got three quarters of the way down, and I got that same feeling like, I don't think I'm going to continue this trip. I think I'll shorten this one and go back up. Well, then he said, we don't stay upstairs either. So they live on the first floor. It's a very large home. So they got this, the parlor. I mean, there's not, the only thing new in that house that is even remotely new is the kitchen area. Everything else is antique. Everything. Glasses, cups, dishes, spoons, knives, everything's antique. Sofas, chairs, tables, pictures, frames, I mean, everything. So we've been going back and forth with this now for, well, since December. The other day he sends me some pictures. He said, now, here's one for the books. And I went, okay. So he says, you remember where the child gate is? Because they have a little 1.5-year-old guy. And this kid's small. He's not a big kid. He's just a little kid. And he don't even get to the near the top of this 3-foot-high child gate, childproof gate that separates the kitchen from the den. And he said, here's the first picture. And I'm looking. There's a picture of the gate and the doorway. Okay, yeah, I see the sofa. Okay, well, he says, here's the second picture. That's a picture of a mirror. And I said, okay, so it's a mirror. What am I looking at here? He says, well, I can see them without the mirror, but I can't photograph them. I said, photograph who? He says, I'll show you in picture number 3, but let me explain this. He said, we're in the kitchen making supper. I turned around. I saw these two shadowy things standing behind the gate in the den. He said, ain't the kid. Kid's right here. We don't have any dogs and cats, so it ain't dogs and cats. I said, okay, then what? He said, I remembered in an old movie about, you know, you can't see things through a mirror, and some things you can see through a mirror that aren't there. So he said he went upstairs, got the wife's dressing mirror, one of these tall, 5-foot-tall things, brought it down, set it in the corner of the kitchen, and pointed it in the direction of the gate. Because he said every time I picked up the camera and pointed it at them, they would disappear. He said, so I picked the camera up this time. They were in the mirror, and I photographed it, and there they are. And I'll be damned, there they are. And I don't know what they are. One's a little taller than the other. I would say the taller one is about 4 foot. And the other one maybe 3'4", 3'5". They have no shape to speak of. And they're stone black. And he said, the last picture I'm going to send you, I turned around and took a picture without the mirror, and they're not there. So there's a picture with they're not there, picture of the mirror where you can see him, a picture directly at the mirror where he took a really good photograph of him, and the last picture where he turned around and took a shot and they weren't there. How's that for bizarre?
Yeah. Now, what type of other activity is he having going on in the house? I mean, does he feel threatened and frightened of this location?
Yeah, they won't live upstairs anymore. So I said, well, can I go upstairs? He said, yeah. He said, I'll go along with you. He said, but you go first. Oh, man. So we go up the steps, and I get to the top of the steps, and I go into the kid's room, and I have a meter with me. And the kid's room is fine. The meter doesn't even move other than residual. So we go into his wife's room, and I said, first thing I noticed was two closets, and both closets had these huge lag bolts in them, screws, you know. I said, what's with the bolts? He said, we don't keep those doors open. I said, what's in there? He said, I don't know, and I don't want to know. I said, well, can we open one? He went, you can, I'm not. So he gets me a screwdriver, and I take the screws out of the door, and I open the door. And it was like this god-awful smell in there. Not sulfurous, but like mildew, wet dog kind of smell. And I put the meter in there, pinned the needle right away. I took the meter out, and it was halfway, just like it was in the rest of the room. I put the screws back in. And I said, so what happened in this room that you got these things? He said, in the middle of the night, he said, you could hear the doors open. He said, look at the end of the bed, and there'd be something standing there. He said, when we screw the door shut during daytime, we don't have that problem anymore, but we're not staying up here. And he said, and then there's the attic, which is another whole story. It's kind of like the basement. And
well, I said, Butch, okay. Butch, let me ask you this. For these people that block off rooms,
mm-hmm.
if there's truly something otherworldly there, why can they be there but they can't get through a wooden door or a screwed wooden door?
Yeah, that my thing exactly. I mean, if it's all over the house and it go from wall to wall or room to room right. without any, what the heck's a screw going to do? But I guess it gives them peace of mind. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a paranormal guy. I'm beginning to believe I am now. So I go up the attic. Halfway up those steps, Dave, I haven't had a fear like that since the day I got married. And it was, I had to push myself to take those last 4 or 5 steps. I'm halfway up when the guy says to me, he says, you need to look at the circle on the floor. And I turned around, I said, what are you talking about? He said, there's a circle on the floor and it moves around. And I said, okay. So I get to the top of the steps, and the first thing I catch in the corner of my eye is a coffin. I'm sure everybody has one of those in their attic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple.
Yeah, and then there's like this table with these little vials. Maybe some were 4 inches high, maybe a couple were 6. Most were about 3 of dirt. Oh, I didn't pay attention to that. And the lighting up there is terrible. Probably a 10-watt bulb or 15, 20-watt bulb. It was terrible. But I could see the circle. So I walked over to the circle. Of course, the needle's pinned. And I'm looking at it, and it's not painted. I scuffed it with my foot. It doesn't scuff. It doesn't move. And I started to walk back toward the stairway to go back down, and I stopped, and I thought, like, you know what? Maybe I ought to take a really good picture of this. As I turned around, the circle wasn't there anymore. It was over in the left-hand corner of the room, and the light went out. And that's when this guy ran down those steps. So I get to the bottom. I said, does this go on a lot? I mean, with the lights blowing and stuff? He says, oh, he said, I buy a case of light bulbs. He said, every 2 weeks. He said, I'm replacing light bulbs constantly here. I said, have you had the electric checked? He said, I grew up in this house. My parents live across the street. When I got married, they gave me this house. This house has brand new electric in it. He said, a new 200 amp service. Everything's been going over, new plumbing, heating, everything. I said, okay, well, that rules that out. So just to make my own mind, I went out in the truck and got a voltmeter and came back in and checked a couple sockets, and they were all neutrals and hots. Everything was fine. So I said, what's with the coffin up in the attic? He said, oh, we bought that at a sale. A funeral home went out of business down near Philly. We bought that at a sale. We bought it for like $30. I went, what are you going to do with it? And he said, I don't know. We were thinking about making it into a coffee table or something. I said, you need to get this stuff out of your house. I said, and what's with the little jars that look like dirt or sand? He said, well, that's dirt from graves. I said, so you collect dirt from graves? Well, my wife used to really be into satanic stuff, he said, and I was into Kabbalah. And it just seemed like, you know, we just wanted to learn. And I'm thinking like, oh, my God, whatever you brought into this house is nuts. I said, have you bought anything at a sale lately? You just brought in when this started. Yeah, well, there's one thing. We keep it out in the back of the BMW. I said, back to the BMW. He said, yeah, it's in a trunk locked up in a box. I said, well, what is it? He said, it's a mask from Haiti. I said, can I see it? He said, I'll bring it in, open it up, take whatever pictures you want, take a quick look at it. I'm locking it back up and taking it outside. I said, oh, okay. So he goes outside. He's out there for about 5 minutes. He comes walking. He's white as a sheet. Like, he just got held up in Brooklyn, you know?
Right.
And he puts it on the table. He unlocks it, opens a box. I'm staring at this thing. I get my pictures. And I'm really looking at it. I'm going like, this is a voodoo death mask. And he says, yeah. He said, you know your antiques. I said, my wife used to be involved in antiques a lot. I said, those are real goat horns. And this thing is made out of real human skin. Yeah, we know that. I said, could you get this out of here, please? And off he went. So this is still on. These three that I mentioned tonight, they're still ongoing, along with, of course, the bipedal. But I'm beginning now to believe, because, like I said, these two particular cases started out as UFO reports with UFOs seen by the witness and by myself. And so that's factual. But the stuff that has followed at the farm and at this house are just so bizarre and unnerving that I don't know which way to go with it. I don't know where to go. I mean, it just turned me right around in my thinking, like, okay, what's these things in the mirror that are at the doorway that he can't photograph when he looks at them, but right. when he shoots them in the mirror, he gets the photograph. And what's with this barn, who everything around it gets destroyed in a hellacious windstorm, and they don't even blow the leaves away, or an empty trash can that's parked outside, and there's no damage to the house. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, certainly intriguing and bizarre. Butch, in all the research you've done, all the investigations that you've been to, and claims that you've researched, do you ever find yourself in a position where it is so active or so frightening that you just say, you know, this is not this is it. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to be at this investigation. I'll turn it over to someone else.
Well, this last one at the house, not so much the farm, but the house. When I came home that evening from the very first, I was there for like 5 hours. I got home like 3 a.m. And talking to my wife the next morning, I said, I just have this really uneasy feeling about what's going on there. And I said, I've never felt uneasy at any investigation. Oh, I may have been like, I don't know if I should go through that door or not, but I do. And I did have protection on me. I was wearing protection. I learned a long time ago to keep that stuff with me. I don't want to bring anything home. And whether it's UFO or canine or anything else. So, there are some things where, you know, like especially this one, I've gotten a hold of a group in a local area. They're a ghost hunting group. It's a family. They've been involved, and they're actually incorporated. They've been involved since 1979. And after giving them all the information, even they feel a little reluctant to do this. It's just like, wait a minute. These folks are out looking for ghosts or whatever they're looking for, or paranormal entities or whatever. But yet, here's a case where they're documented, photographed, witnessed. I mean, the whole nine yards, and they're reluctant to get involved. So where does that put the paranormal?
Right.
So it's neat to talk about it on the radio or write a book about it or be at a conference or speaking, you know, in front of a crowd in a library. But when you got to walk through that dark door and down those steps or up the steps into the attic where there's a coffin parked, why are you reluctant now? I mean, I had one researcher say to me, because of what I told him happened on our first expedition with this bipedal, he said, I'd never go back in those woods again. I said, well, how are you ever going to know? He said, I don't have to know that bad.
Right.
I guess that's where I'm the oddball, because I want to know. You know, I want to know the truth.
So,
I want to
see. Okay, Butch, then what is the game plan? Let's say you go and you find the area where this bipedal large wolf-like creature was stalking and somewhat aggressive. And what happens if you run into him? Butch, what is your plan of action?
Our only plan is, look, I don't want to kill anything. If Bigfoot jumped out on me, I wouldn't raise a gun and blow his brains out. We have non-lethal weapons that we keep in the truck. They are ghost gas and riot balls, same thing police use. They'll stop a Kodiak, they'll stop a grizzly, they'll stop a black bear, they'll stop a wolf or a coyote or a mountain lion. I mean, they're very high-impact, gassed-up guns is what they are. And I would even be reluctant to use that unless I felt my life was in fear. But, you know, we never go alone. There's always more than four or five of us at a time. Sometimes there's eight. So everybody knows to protect everybody else. Everybody's got something, either it's bear spray or a non-lethal weapon of some sort. And then we carry some lethal weapons also. But I think if I ran away, Dave, all I've been doing now, if I did that, everything I've done now for the last 26, 27 years is a waste of time and money. So I really want to find out what's there. I want to be able to prove it exists. I just can't imagine 23 people in central Pennsylvania, which is a very, very large area, have described to me the same exact thing that I found in a newspaper clipping in 1865. And that to me is just amazing. So
right.
when people say, what is it? I just say, well, to me, it's a relic. It's probably been here for a long, long time. And there are other sightings. Like, this is not a dogman sighting. Dogman is a totally different description in size and shape, in mannerisms. It's seen on all fours. It's seen digging in trash cans, dumpsters, you know, walking around parking lots. This thing has never been seen outside these state parks. It'll come close to a road. Like, if there's a road and it's like 20 feet till you hit the woods, it'll be at the edge of the woods. It won't walk out to that road. We've never had one on a road. We've never had one out from under cover of some sorts, like the bush or near the swamp or wherever. They just don't do it. So, again, my best bet is to use all the technology that we can and just, you know, set this out in the areas where we have had sightings and hope that we'd get lucky enough that they'd come back into that area. Or maybe it's their travel path that we've stumbled on.
Well, we wish you a lot of luck, Butch, and please, will you keep in touch with us as these investigations continue to unfold and give us updates?
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Let's do that. What's your website so people can visit and see your research and evidence and the stories and case files you've worked on?
UFORCOP.com is the website. They can also read and see the Lycan Loop maps and all our reports on phantomsandmonsters.com. And if they need to get a hold of me, go to the website, just go to the contact page, give me a phone number or an email address. I'll get a hold of you. I check it religiously, like every 4 hours. I'll get back to you right away. And if there's anything we can do, or if I can, even if you're way out of state and I can't get to you, like I said, we have 12 affiliate groups, so I can send somebody to the scene to get you help.
Butch, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I want to thank everybody for spending their week with us here. And remember, if you are missing True Crime Tuesday, we've got it up. It's available now. You can find it. Just go to darknessradio.com, click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and you can sign up. Subscribe right now. It's only $5 a month. That's $1.25 per episode, and you'll get the best in true crime and dumb crimes and stupid criminals delivered to you every Tuesday. This last week, Bloodthirst, the true story of the vampire serial killer with Alan Warren. It's a terrifying story. You want to hear this, don't miss out on it. Or you can go check out the link and hear just a snippet of the show for yourself so you can see what you've been missing. Only $5 a month, folks. This is your chance. Get on board with us, and we will present you with a brand new episode every week. 90 to 120 minutes long of the best in true crime talk radio. We'll be back next week with more supernatural, paranormal, and stories of just the plain out bizarre. I want to also mention, go check out Minneapolis Wizard World this weekend. I will be out all weekend long, and I want you to come on out and say hi to me. I'm on four different panels. Two today on Friday. You can find me at the superhero movies panel, and you can find me at the nightmare creatures panel, the monsters. I'll be talking about all these type of creatures, bloody bones man, black-eyed kids, the faceless, shadow people, and more. You can find that. And on Saturday, the Doctor Whoniverse panel, I'll be moderating that. And then Sunday, come on out and monkey around with me, Peter Tork, and Mickey Dolenz at the Wizard World Comic Con as we talk about their 50 years together as musicians, actors, and friends. We'll find out inside stories about partying with the Beatles and more, and that's all this weekend. You could find information at wizardworld.com and then click on the Minneapolis show. You can get tickets right now. Well, that's it for this week. We will be back with you next week. Be kind, love one another, and we'll be back with more Beyond the Darkness.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityCairo.com. That's AbilityCairo.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.